This is Empowered Human Academy. Welcome home.
This is about love. This is about light. This is about the idea that you contain everything you will ever need.
And this life of yours, this is where you expand, you grow, and you remember who you are.
I'm Abe.
I'm Isaac.
In Empowered Human Academy, we join with humans of all kinds to feel the inspiration that can only come from empowered living.
The stories you hear today are unique, but the energy you hear today is yours too. So, with hearts wide open, let's begin.
Thank you for being here.
Hey crew, this episode is Pay What Feels Good. Rather than pulling in sponsors and paid advertisements, we are excited to try something different. I'll talk more about this at the very end of this episode, or you could read more at empoweredhumanacademy.com.
Hello, empowered humans, and welcome back. If you've been with us for a while, then you've probably heard us mention our newest offering, Lightword Together. Our intention is to foster the most positive and inspiring space on the internet by gathering a collective of people creating their own joy and building their dream lives. Our next group coaching session is February 15th, and you can sign up at lightword.com/together. We'd love to see you there. Now, on to today's episode.
Our guest this week is the generous, thoughtful, and endlessly creative Michael Forsberg. Having spent time in both the corporate and nonprofit worlds, Michael's ambition to amplify social impact is the unchanging undercurrent of his work. Now, as an associate director at a brand strategy firm, Michael helps his clients unlock hidden potential by listening, learning, and remixing research-based findings into fresh ideas. He's also hiked Mount Kilimanjaro and run 5 ultramarathons to help raise money for clean water.
I've known Michael since we were in elementary school, and it's been really inspiring witnessing and staying in sync with his evolution over the years. We've covered a lot of ground in this episode: the nature of identity, cognitive biases, beliefs about money, being true to your values, and how living in Los Angeles has shifted and expanded his thinking.
I enjoyed this conversation so much that I quite literally couldn't stop smiling. Michael is such a thought-provoking and delightful conversation partner. He gave us a generous snapshot of what he's processing at this stage of his life, and we loved every minute. So, let's get into it.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Empowered Human Academy. Today we have our really, really good friend, Michael Forsberg, and we are so thrilled to be having this conversation with you tonight. It's a Wednesday evening in the middle of January when the days are short and the Zoom meetings are frequent. So thank you so much for joining us today, Mike Forsberg. And we're just so excited to have you.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. This is probably going to be one of the most fun Zoom meetings of the infinite Zoom meetings of the day, week, and dare I say, year. The short, long year so far.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad. The best in a stream of infinite Zooms. That is high praise. We are grateful. We begin with an inquiry into the notion of self-identity. So, dear Michael Forsberg, or Mike, or I understand you have many aliases. Maybe we'll talk about that later. Who are you to yourself? That is the question. When you come home and when you are not on a Zoom meeting, what words of identity do you sit with? Who are you when you come home and it's just you and there's no presenting?
Wow. As a professional presenter, it's funny because when I come home, sometimes I literally become the exact opposite. And I kind of turn into this zero output, zero thinking, zero communication. And I love a good sitcom. Like, there's something about sitting down and not having to be thinking, assessing, analyzing, learning, listening. I love listening. It's like one of my favorite things in the world, which we can talk about in a little bit. But there's something about giving it all out to the world. And then when you come home, you just don't have to do anything or be anyone. And so my true self at home is probably more like a quiet, calm, babbling brook version of myself. And then when I'm out in the world, that tends to be more of a stream, a waterfall. We can keep talking about water if we want, but that's maybe who I am. I think I've realized, to answer your question, I have like multiple versions of myself. And I've been trying to figure out which one is the real version, because I think they're all true and they're all right. And some people unlock different parts of me in different ways. And like, how can I be so differently with these people and different in these other groups, but still the same person? So Sure. I don't know, Isaac.
Does that feel like a point of conflict, or is there a sense? Like, here's the background for that question. I've heard a lot of people describe like the kind of connection to oneness or sort of Zen and just letting go of everything and not striving for output or anything like that. And so that was the first thing that I thought of when you said, "When I come home, I just am." I mean, I'm paraphrasing a bit here. Does that feel good? And also alongside knowledge of all of your other presentations, I guess, does all of that feel comfortable and right and a part of yourself, or is there uncertainty or friction or tension there?
I think it's great right now. Awesome. Literally, I went through some changes career-wise. We've all had life changes pandemic-wise, and it sounds silly, but I needed to update my Instagram bio. I'm like, what do I write? Who am I? Mm-hmm. So I just wrote, rediscovering thyself, BRB, because I don't know. I know. Mm-hmm. But it's like, what do you put into a very tiny phrase box when you are not a very tiny phrase person, because we are complex individual layers? And what do you choose to present to the world in a bio or a LinkedIn or a resume or whatever? So I'm right now really enjoying exploring all of the old parts of myself that I've always known, while also pioneering new parts of myself that I'm excited to get to know and build, and things that don't exist, and just we can do that as people. We can become something, and that's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. I appreciate, too, the taking a moment in your life to update her Instagram bio. Like, we don't have to wait until it's engraved on a tombstone. This isn't a permanent epitaph. Mm. This is like, where am I at the moment?
What has that journey been like for you? Not wrestling with, but being in the kind of in-between of like assessing who you have been and adventuring forward with who you want to become or who you are becoming.
The journey has been, like when you said that, Abe, since I've known you since, like 1995 or something?
Yeah.
I just saw like a flashback timeline of all the different hairstyles that you and I have had.
Wow.
Whether it's like blonde, long, shaggy hair for you, or like faux hawk mullet for me, or whatever it is. Like, there's something about looking back and being like, man, that was kind of I wouldn't do that haircut again. But expanding that into who we are now, and I think your hair is great today, hopefully. Whatever, it's the end of the day here. There's something about being happy with who you are in the moment, but then becoming the next version of yourself and being good with your current state and not dwelling on the previous state, but recognizing that your previous state led you to who you are now. And I think the answer maybe is something along the lines of enjoying where you've been, but even more so enjoying where you are now, knowing that there's kind of a hopeful next thing if you want it. You could keep the same hairstyle or personality or level of exuberance forever, but you always have the freedom to change it. So I like the idea, knowing that in any given moment, I can pull a Britney and just shave it all off.
Love that.
Figuratively or literally, I think that's how I'd describe it.
That's beautiful. I love the peace in that. Like, I didn't sense any urgency in that description. Like, there's no frantic, gotta find the next reinvention, gotta figure out what's next, gotta get ahead, can't miss anything. I hear a lot of contentment in a good way, like a peace with where you are while also being positively expectant of good yet to come. Is that fair?
That's fair. A little reminder every Sunday night, it pops up and it's called self-check-in. It's like one of those phone reminders. And I have a list of all the things just to be assessing, like, how's your health? How's your spirit? How's your relationships? How's your hobbies? How's your marriage? All these things. And I think just having a constant reflection of all the things that I've listed as important to my life, if something is incongruent with how I want it to be, then I can just think about it and figure out what needs to change, or how might this look differently. So I'm kind of in a state of micro maintenance of who I am at all times and aiming to be the best version of myself. And if I'm not, Sunday at like 9 p.m., I'll get a reminder. And it's like, how are these things with your soul and mind and being? So that has helped me, I think, stay content.
That makes sense. I have two questions about that. The first one is a simple practical one. Like, we like to give folks practical tools. Do you have a specific like app or something that you use for that? Or is it just normal reminders?
It's the Native Reminders app on my, shall we say, Apple device.
Not sponsored.
It just says in the title of the reminder, like self-check-in. And in the body, I have just a bullet point list of 10 of the things that I've kind of identified as, this is what's important to me. And when I'm at my best in these 10 things, then I'm at my best self. But also recognizing that life is hard and complicated and we can't strive for 100% A pluses all the time. And just recognizing that if I'm giving myself a C or a D in one category, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But being aware of if something is suffering in that list, knowing about it and not having a blind spot to it, that's been helpful. I recommend it for a practical tip.
I love that.
I love that very much.
Practice.
Talk to me, if you would, about your relationship to, as you said, micro maintenance was the word that you used, as distinct from macro maintenance. Like, how do those things show up in your life? Maybe lately, maybe over time.
Yeah, I think, was it Warren Buffett that said, if you can just become 1% better every day, you're better off.
Yeah.
I think that there's something about that cumulative compound interest, if you will, around what it looks like to improve. And an example, I've kind of in the past 10 years become this endurance athlete. I say athlete with quotes because the word athlete has a lot of associations to it. But someone who runs marathon plus distances or long triathlons or whatever, and recognizing that if you want to run 56 miles or cycle swim bike 140.6 miles or 5K or whatever it is, you kind of have to start by like learning how to put your shoes on and then get out the door and build a habit of getting out there and walking and then maybe running and maybe you run for 10 minutes and then maybe you run for 20 minutes and then you're up to a mile. And having seen the value of not trying to do that full distance all at once and learning what it means to micro build towards something, mm-hmm. having an end in mind is really important to me. And it helps alleviate the pressure to try to do it all at once. Mm-hmm. In marathoning, for instance, I've seen people, they get so ambitious when they see 26.2 miles or 13.1 miles for a half that they want to just go all out and their first run, go for 10. Mm. And you could go for it. Some people can do that. Most people, it's going to hurt real bad. So I think for me, being able to take that mentality and translate it to everything, whether it's self-development, you know, mind, body, or soul, it's kind of what I ascribe to, because it's more reasonable to get to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. I've seen and been a part of your life for a long time, like we were talking about. And a reason why we want to have this conversation is just because I've seen that kind of slow, steady state of just microly progressing. And in terms of like what people see on the macro level, they're like, oh my God, he's running those marathons. He's speaking in front of these big crowds and you're kind of like well-known in the communities that you run in. And it's really cool to see like on the back end of that, you kind of focusing on even those weekly reminders of like, how am I doing? I know we talked a couple months ago and you're like, I want to be better at communicating. And like you didn't promise me that you were going to call every week. You just set that intention and you showed up a little bit more. So I just want to paint the picture for our listeners a little bit about kind of why and who Michael is. And for those of you who are listening, Michael and I have been good friends since elementary school. We grew up in the same neighborhood and I helped him score one of his first girlfriends. Thank you so much. I am such a good wingman. Thank you for
great
those
wingman.
Of you who are listening. But who are you? I know we kind of like talked about that in the beginning, but like you are not in elementary school anymore. And I want the folks who are listening to kind of have a little bit more in depth about like who you are in your communities that you run in, what you're passionate about, and kind of what excites you.
Who are you? That's the question, right? I think there's something I've been thinking about recently in our virtual worlds is that when people get on a Zoom call for work or for whatever, oftentimes people say two very common things. One, hey, can you hear me? Hey, can you see me? And that's funny to me because it's very practical, right? Am I on mute? Is my technology working? But at the same rate, like all of us as humans want to be seen and want to be heard. And I think that's what we want as people. And so when it comes to like, who are we? Who am I? I think I wonder, how do people see me and how do people hear me in terms of what I mean to them in their world? And I think it's really fascinating to see some people see me in certain ways and totally different in other ways. But I hope at my best that people see me as, and who I think I am, is a compassionate listener that would ask nice, curious, good questions that have earnest, true intention to really wanting to learn more about what the other person is saying, because I'm curious, number one. But two, I love the fact that I think Henry David Thoreau once said, if when people talk, simply listen, because most people never listen. And when you can just give someone a chance to share what they're going through and you don't have to have the right answer, I love what happens when people can talk and feel heard and feel seen. And I think if that's not who I am, that's at least who I want to be, is a friend that shows up for people and I'm there for you And there's zero judgment. If you want to like drink way too many beers or whiskeys and talk to me, let's do it. If you want to sit in a private church sanctuary, let's do it. Like, I hope that there's a whole spectrum of ultimate accessibility and ultimate acceptance, that wherever anyone is coming from, that I can be someone that's going to be there to listen and be there for you. So you guys can tell me if I'm doing an okay job at being that person. Not now, maybe in private, so we can hear the answer. But that's, I think, who I am and who I want to be. But then there's also these other things, right? Is how do people know you in their spaces? Because that's different. Mm-hmm. Because you call me Michael, because some people know me as Mike, other people know me as Michael, other people know me as Berg. And all these names that we receive and inherit, people can ascribe meaning to us. Mm-hmm. And I think what's challenging about your question that you asked in the beginning, Isaac, is who am I at the end of the day? Is sometimes who we are can be affected by how people perceive us. Mm-hmm. Because in their minds, even if we are one way and we know who we are at our core, if other people perceive us differently, well, then you're at odds.
Yeah.
So some people think I'm really nerdy, and you know what? They're right. Some people think I'm cool. They're wrong.
Oh, I think you're great. I think you're cool.
I came across a quote today, actually, so this is timely. It said, I think I'm getting this right. I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I am who I think you think I am. Self-identifying according to the perception that I perceive you having of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is interesting that you have, like we joked earlier, like all these aliases, people know you in a bunch of different spaces, and yet these things are all you. Do you feel equally at home in all of these?
Yes. But when those homes all come together, it can be confusing of like, wait, which version am I really? Because you can find certain strengths in certain versions of yourself, but there's also levels of when that strength isn't strong in another place. First, for me, I want to be the best version of myself. But if my social currency in one realm doesn't translate to another, then I kind of scratch my head and be like, well, that's who I am, but is that who I should be? Because it's not working here, but it works over there. So I think that's certainly right. Your quote is really tickling my brain right now.
Given that you, okay, so you talked about strengths and different versions of yourself. And I think in a given context, the mental algorithm for figuring out how to improve, like that's always based on context, right? Like, what am I improving for? And earlier you talked about like this regular micro maintenance check. And I think you listed off a couple of things, but I'm curious about like the relationship between what's on that list and all of the contexts that you find yourself in that might be served by optimizing for one thing in particular, and maybe improving one area serves one context in a way that it wouldn't serve another. So how do you decide what's important? Does it vary over time? Maybe what's important right now? Where to extend, I'm asking a lot of questions, so respond to this how you will. To take the marathon thing as a metaphor for right now, where are you putting your shoes on right now? What are you stepping into in this moment also?
Oh gosh, Isaac, that's such a good question, because when you were asking it, I was seeing it two ways, right? There's what's your top 10 list of values and what's important to you? And then how do you live a life that reflects those? Versus how are you reactionary to a certain set of values and you're only responding to what's working in social situations. I think I've probably started life being more responsive growing up in Christian households or certain communities. Like being good was like my jam because being good was rewarded and valued. So I wanted to be a good kid. But then let's say you have some friends that like being really good is not cool. Well, you don't want to be as good anymore because you feel like, hey, this value that I thought was good from other people is not reinforced in the same way with these people over here. So I think that's the journey that I started. Maybe a lot of us start is trying to figure out what will get me the acceptance or what will give me the love or what will give me the success that, that we want. But then at a certain time, you realize like it's exhausting because there's too many variables to serve. And people to please. So then you say, time out. Let's stop trying to please everybody. Let's say, who am I? What is important to me now that I've lived a little bit of life? And so I think I'm on the other side now, is I can look at this list of what's important to me. And then on that, identify, how can I live this out with people? So if, let's say, physical fitness is on my list of values, when we were in France almost 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, and Abe was like, can you do a workout together? Yes, I love that. You love that. We found something that we can share in our values, and we're doing squats with boulders in Provence because we both share that value. And I think that's really exciting to understand your values, find people that understand their values, and then bring them together and then magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I want to make sure that I understand kind of the sequence that you've laid out here. Like you start out, and you specifically, and we hazard that other people maybe experience this also. I have. You start out in a very responsive place, very sensitive to your environment, learning what's important from what's around you, from what those voices are. And then at some point you run into kind of input overwhelm where like there's too much to pay attention to and the signals are in conflict. And then you start some self-determination and what you decide is important. You then figure out how to relate that to other people that you're in contact with. Is that fair?
Well said, in fewer words, yes.
Well, and what's interesting, I'm currently reading Atomic Habits by James Clear, and he talks about that in his book, like you're more likely to become something that you want if you hang around the people that share those similar values, because it actually, there's a cue in your brain that says, oh, this is going to be a lot more rewarding because I'm not trying to fight against something. It's going to be kind of stacking on top these preferred variables or delightful variables, if you will. So that's interesting that you said that. How has that kind of shaped your Enneagram number and how you kind of view the world?
Well, the Enneagram number that I resonate with is the number 3, which is the achiever, with a wing 2, which is the helper, if you ascribe to the titles. And there, I think the pitfall there is the ambition can be overwhelming. And sometimes the act of achieving can outweigh the true value and appreciation for the thing that you're doing. Mm-hmm. So I think I started to find myself doing things that I was getting satisfaction just to like climb that thing or to cross that line or whatever, unlock that door. But then I realized like the more I was doing that, like sometimes I would get on the other side of that door. I'm like, I don't even want to be on this side of the door. I just want to open the door. So I think that's something that I've been trying to reconcile with is like, what's worth spending time, energy, attention toward that when that door is opened, that I'm happy that I'm there and I don't feel like I just wasted all this time. Because the older I get, the realize I'm like, I can't be bothered with wasting time. There's my wife, Jill, she's in an acting class and one of the students is, I think, in her 60s or 70s.
Oh, awesome.
And she's like getting into acting now and her email signature says something like, lots of energy to spend, but no energy to waste. And I'm like,
oh, I love that.
Yeah. Sign me up for that one.
Yeah.
Where we're the things that we're toiling towards, like how are we spending that energy wisely rather than wasting it on and achieving just for the sake of achieving.
Sure. That makes sense.
I love that. I love that.
Way earlier on, you mentioned that it was important to you in your development as your, I don't know if I want to adopt the like pull the door metaphor here. I'm not going to. Moving on. Earlier you mentioned that it was important to have an end in mind. So connecting that to like what we're talking about here. What ends do you have in mind right now? Not necessarily like lifelong, but like what targets are important to you at the moment? Maybe tying this back to your threeness, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I think let's talk about the thing that people don't like to talk about is money. This is a taboo topic, or it can be for some. I was on a walk recently and I just have recently spent like the last 7 to 10 years of my life working for an international humanitarian organization, which is incredible. And I loved my role and I loved my job. And I love the idea of bringing clean water, sanitation and hygiene to communities that don't have it, and super fired up, super energized, super motivated by the cause. And, you know, recently we moved to Los Angeles, my wife and I, her name is Jill. She's wonderful. And it's expensive out here. Things are different. And I started to think long-term about like, my parents are still very young. I have a really fascinating story. I went to my father's high school graduation. That's how young my parents are. But I started just imagining like what happens one day if they are in need of financial assistance later on in life. What role can I play as helping that in terms of like a nursing home or a assisted living or something like that? Mm-hmm. And so my value of money, which is I'd probably put lower on the totem pole of that list, start to raise a little bit higher because I'm like, well, I want to be able to be a son or a husband and slash partner or a brother or a friend that can have more means to provide more in different types of settings, because the previous route wasn't going to enable me to do that in the same way that I wanted to working in a nonprofit space. So I think that's an example of how those values can shift over time and how like current circumstances can evolve and modify. And I still have the same relationship to money. Now it just isn't a different priority and category for this time of my life. Mm-hmm. I'm not chasing I was going to, I just like saw like all these boats and like Scrooge McDuck diving into the gold. I'm not after affluence per se, but I'm after a different level of earning that will achieve a different level of support to be who I am. It's just someone's there.
And what has that been like moving through the space where your kind of priorities shift and change? Has it like kind of rattled you in different ways, or has it kind of made you feel uncomfortable kind of facing these different, what could have been in the past taboo subjects, to now have them in the forefront of your thinking, especially moving to Los Angeles, to a new place? Mm-hmm. Has that impacted that as well?
Yeah, that is a sub bullet in a broader category of the mentality that I heard a lot growing up in the Midwest, which I think good, and I always want to maintain the humility, is kind of like tone down, be a little bit less, don't be too much. And that spans across all sorts of things, money included. Like, do you really need that extra Burt's Bees in the 5-pack, or can you just be cool with one? Burt's Bees is expensive. One day, dude, I just, side note, finished my first Burt's Bees in a year thanks to this pandemic. So I just feel amazing. Very accomplished. I need to tell everyone that.
Amazing.
You lose them otherwise.
That's true.
But going back to your question, like moving out west, there's a different level of not needing to tamper down or be less in terms of the voices that I was hearing. And so there's a little bit more of a boldness to say, like, if you want to be more, go for it, be more. Because I'm looking around, people are being more. People are being extra on extra on extra. You got this mountain. And someone says, let's build a gigantic house on stilts next to this mountain, overlooking all the rest of the city. Why not? There's a different level of impossible and eccentric and wild ambition that's unhindered. So it's kind of made me take the governor off myself a little bit and say, what would it look like if I just, not for the sake of selfishness, but let my ambition really come to life where it really is, and not had to turn it down, because I would find myself being less or trying to be less or be smaller for the sake of others. But it was just making myself smaller for what? I don't know. So humility, get confident. Let's do it. Let's change things. Let's make it happen.
We're like over here, like shimmying.
For those of you who are not watching the video, I'm doing this little dance whenever I get really excited.
Okay, here's why it's exciting to us. Because, I mean, I do this for my work every day. I help people kind of shatter those glass ceilings that was put on them either from themselves or their community or their family, and kind of sit with their actual desires as they change and as they evolve and not repress them. And I think that's when health emerges, is when we are at full expression and when we allow ourselves to just be free of and free to create and do whatever we want, right? And it's really cool that you're saying that, because I think some people who have moved from, whether it be their hometown or travel or just have different experiences, it's really interesting to see what happens when we get out of an environment that we thought was the only type of way to be. And when we have examples of what other people are doing, it ignites this part of our brain that could be like, oh, why not me? Or this could be me too. And that's why I think I really appreciate our friendship over the years, is because like we've both been on similar journeys of stepping out and exploring and seeing what resonates and what doesn't. Because not everything resonates, has resonated with us along the way, but we've been able to kind of explore the different parts of ourselves in different contexts, which has been really cool. Isaac, you had something to say?
I did. So I haven't moved to LA
yet,
but I've had experiences where like I've come into contact with groups that give me that permission implicitly just by dint of how they are. Mm-hmm. And I know that for me, that like that initial exposure at first was very unsettling, and I had to figure out my way with it. And I feel like I might not be alone in that situation. Not projecting, but I do want you to talk about what it was like. Well, like, first of all, did you see that coming at all? Was that part of why you moved to LA? Was that at all a goal? So initially the approach, and then once you get there, what was your initial exposure like? How did that find you at first? And then finally, what are you finding in yourself? What is, now the governor's off, where are you taking it? So that whole progression.
Oh gosh, it's really funny, because prior to moving, I think there's a narrative about Los Angeles, right? Materialism, greed, selfishness, Botox, Kardashians, whatever. There's an export story of what the city means. And sure, there's that. There is great inequity on the streets of Los Angeles. There is now over 60,000 homeless people in LA County. There's a lot of despair and need. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's unfair to villainize the city as a whole, because there's a lot happening here, and a lot of good and a lot of struggle. But hearing that kind of narrative ahead of time of like, it's bad to want to be one of these rich people, but if you watch it on E or Bravo, it's okay because it's escapism, housewives or whatever.
Interesting. Okay.
And I think hearing that, or growing up with like a rich is bad narrative in certain circles, religious or what otherwise, is it kind of helped me frame in my mind an understanding that that mansion is unnecessary and that can be debated or whatever, especially on the other side of my world. Welcome to all the compartments of my brain. Where I'm literally going around the world to see and serve and be part of communities that they have one pair of clothes and they don't have access to clean water. With my own eyeballs, am able to visibly see large gaps on a frequent basis. Mm-hmm. But then when we're getting here, it changed because that evil enemy story that I had maybe heard ahead of time seemed normalized and it seemed commonplace. And so something that's elusive and undetermined and perceived as evil, when you see it as becoming normalized, then you have to be like, wait, is this really bad? Is this not bad? Is this normal? What's normal? How does this work? And I think then I found myself trying to figure out, where do I fit into this spectrum, right? Because I live very close to big houses and nice things. I had a very nice gym membership because of some lucky bonus material where I was able to pay a reduced rate. And I like parked my Schwinn Chicago bicycle at the gym in the parking lot next to Teslas, BMWs, Lexuses. I'm like, okay, what does this mean for me to live in a space of affluence and to operate in a space of affluence, but to be riding a Schwinn bike and to not be driving those vehicles? Mm-hmm. It put a different level of assessment, which allowed me to ask deeper questions to break all the preconceived notions or biases that I had growing up and have to make some new decisions around something like material wealth.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready to note. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, you can go.
Okay. There are lots of directions that I want to go with this. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to record three different follow-up episodes based on that last sentence by itself. So tune in. We're not doing that. It's okay, Michael. Okay.
Fire up the battery.
I'm stalling. Okay. The first thing that I want to ask, I guess we'll go most directly relevant. How do you catch yourself in those biases? Because a lot of the time, that's just programmed thinking and you don't even know that you're the way that you're thinking is holding you back from something that is truer. I think we have to define truth in order to answer this question properly.
Yeah.
How do you start to catch yourself thinking in bias?
Great question. Book plug. If you want to learn more about cognitive bias, I just finished listening to Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman.
Yes.
Two types of thinking. Your system one thinking, which is kind of your quick intuitive thinking, and system two, which is your more deliberative, cognitive, rational thinking. And we think that we're more rational, but as humans, we're very emotional. And so our brains create all these shortcuts. And so I've been learning what our brains do, how our brains operate, how our brains work. And this is in part to my new job as well, understanding what human truth is. But there is kind of maybe three questions I tend to ask myself is one, where did I learn this? Two, how do I perceive this as normal in this context versus other contexts? And three, how do I think about this differently today than I did before? And that's kind of like a quick assessment of how I can think through red versus blue, Republican versus Democrat, because we have so many of these dualistic structures in our society, black versus white, blue lives versus black lives. Like somehow we've kind of fallen into having to make choices and stand on certain polarity of issues or social groups or whatever. And a lot of those times it's because someone at some point taught us that this is how it is, or someone normalized it in your community and this is the standard norm. And then you've kind of made a decision. I think for me, like Abe mentioned earlier, the more you move and kind of jump out of your bubbles, the more you're confronted with like, wait, this was normal in this space where I live, but it's not normal here anymore. Why?
And where do you fit into all of it? And
because
you have so much wiring within you that has kind of dictated how you have lived thus far. And then when you're kind of put into this new environment, that all changes.
That's actually almost exactly my next question. Given your experience of jumping to either side of economic disparity or whatever else,
or cities,
like your experience in Africa, your experience in LA, given the fact that you are able to step into a wide variety of spaces and see those things and remember those things, what does empowerment and self-development look like when you have access to so many different standards?
For me, I think one of my core values is generosity. Whether you're rich or poor or somewhere in between. I think the empowerment comes with a spirit of generosity. And anyone, man, anyone loves to be the recipient of generosity, and anyone loves being generous to people and enjoying the fruit of that generosity. Like, I think it's core to who we are as people. Like, there's something about the contagious, infectious nature of generosity that empowers people on both sides of the equation, the recipient and the giver. And so I think that generosity is a tremendous force for good. And I think sometimes we can associate that word with a dollar amount. And you can think, I don't have $1 million to donate to this charity that I love. Like, you don't need $1 million. Like, you need 3 hours in a weekend to volunteer, or you need $1 every month over the course of time. Like, there's so many ways that we can limit our own generosity by our own biases of what generosity looks like. But if we can expand our vision of what generosity looks like and what we're capable of doing, I think that is kind of like the secret sauce of empowerment, end-to-end, period. Thanks for listening. So long. I don't have anything else to say.
XOXO.
This is the first time that a guest has ended the episode instead of us. Thank you
so,
for that.
Speaking of generosity, I think you said it looks like a lot of different ways. And I feel like for me, it's looked like being my most healthiest self, so then I can show up better for my family and friends and my spouse, which then makes a ripple effect to the rest of the world, right? And of course, dollar. I mean, there's just a lot of ways to give. How are you currently excited to give right now?
I think, one, you're absolutely right. Giving of your thought, I think, is really powerful. Mm-hmm. And Abe, you're so good at this. Isaac, you're good at this. Of like, if you're thinking of someone, letting them know that you're thinking of them. The generosity of thought is undervalued, in my opinion. Like, the fact that we can think of people all the time and never let them know, gosh, that's such a waste. And that's what you inspire me to do, is be better at being generous of thought. Because it can be scary, like, hey, thought about you for this thing, and then not to get like the response that we might want or hope for, or whatever. You might put an expectation on what that generosity act looks like. So I think that's one low-hanging fruit, generosity of thought, authentic generosity of thought. Because there's some sneaky people out there thinking of you, aka, I just want you to have me on your radar. Don't do that. That's my opinion. Actually, no, don't do that, period. Number two, I'm excited to do that, but I'm also excited to learn how to be more thoughtful and act like small acts of kindness. And maybe this ties into thoughtfulness, like sending little things in the mail. Like, I just sent a package to my parents of certain types of candy and like a couple books. It wasn't anything valuable in the box that I sent them, but like the excitement of packaging and just like sharing it and going to the U.S. Postal Service. Acts of kindness is another space. And then, yeah, hopefully when I start to kind of increase in earning potential, there's been more things I'm excited to do. Like, I got to send my nephew this exclusive Hot Wheels track for Christmas that was sold out everywhere, but they had them here. And so we shipped it. And it was like such a joy to be like not stressed about the shipping costs because it enabled my, my generosity wasn't hindered by a bank limit. In my mind. So there's some examples.
That's wonderful.
I love that. I'm always curious to ask people, like, what's on your mind lately? Just generally, there's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot going on at work, probably. What are you kind of thinking about when you're on a walk or you're by yourself?
I've actually been thinking a lot about the future of humanity.
So light stuff then. Good, good.
Light stuff. I mean, there's been just a very unique evolution in our politics and our social media. Like, the accelerated rate of technology and globalization and communication intersecting with our abilities to process and deal with it all, it just is a little bit messy right now. I'm sure you've noticed it's a little messy. And will we be able to make sense of the mess in the future, or will it just continue to get more polarized and subdivided in subgroups? I don't think, you know, some people might be worried about like a civil war and, you know, global unrest or whatever. I think we've seen some pretty frustrating parts of our collective humanity. Like, I was just walking down the street and there's this beautiful building that was just built on my street and it's unattended. So they put a fence up to let people not go in. And people are just throwing their dog poop piles and they're walking the dog over the fence. So there's like a whole yard full of dog poop. I'm like, okay, that's humanity maybe at its worst. But we're also seeing humanity at its best. And we're seeing so many good, bad versions of our species mm-hmm. at the same time, it's hard to know, are we good or are we bad? And are we going to be good or are we going to be bad? And what's the middle ground? Mm-hmm. So I think about that a lot around the future of relationships and when do we break ties with people? When do we keep them? When do we say, deleting you, canceled, unfollowed, whatever?
Yeah.
And how will that continue to shape our human behavior with one another?
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, that makes sense, not as in I have now an answer to give you now that you've posed the question of what is going to happen to humanity, but that makes sense as in, yes, I comprehend the question. And this feels, tell me if this is connected to something you said earlier in your new job, a lot of what you think about is understanding human truth. Is there a connection here? Mm-hmm.
To the future of humanity and human truth?
To what you're doing professionally right now. I don't mean to like bring this down to something as pedestrian as like, what are you working on right now? But you mentioned the quest to understand human truth earlier in connection to what you're doing professionally at the moment. So I'm wondering if these thoughts are connected.
That's a great question.
That's a great question. And thank you for asking. Yes, it does have a lot to do because I probably wouldn't be spending as much time thinking about like cognitive biases and the psychology of how we do things if it weren't for this transition in my life where I started a new role as a consultant at a firm called Brand Trust. We're a brand strategy and research firm. And what's really exciting about Brand Trust is we use applied social sciences, like human psychology, to understand the power of human truths, how we make meaning in the world. Because all of our constructs that we perceive and build, we do the same thing for brands. Brands are perceptions. Like people will pay more for one brand of salt because it reminds them of grandma than the generic brand because of the emotion that it feels, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of ways that we think about things as people, and brands and companies have challenges and they want to understand better how people think about them and what could be different and how can they make something new and innovate. And so we get the chance to dive deep into a wide variety of sectors to learn all these different things that people are thinking and feeling and how that all works together. Mm-hmm. And it has kind of just blown my mind to see all the wonderful variation of how the human mind works, operates, and makes meaning. And then therefore, how do I make meaning? What am I doing in this space? So there's a lot of self-reflection in that too.
Is it too simple a question to just ask you to go on? Like, can you give me an example of something that not undid you, but like a moment in this new exploration that really made you learn something? Is that question make sense?
Yeah. I mean, gosh, there's different levels. You know, there's the methodology of research that we do. There's the insights that we pull out. But the thing that I'm excited about is kind of one of the required reading before I started. A couple of book recommendations went my way. And one of them was by Kate Murphy called You're Not Listening. And as researchers, as consultants, as strategists that ultimately want to answer these brand framework questions or business challenge questions, it starts with listening. And earlier this year, I was like, dang it, I wish I could just have a job where I can listen, learn, and remix. Like, that's what I want to do. I did not know that that job existed in this form. And so that's why I'm super jazzed to be a place to be able to listen, to learn, and to remix, because I'm curious and we get to be professional, curious Georges and Georgettes and Georginas and whatever form of George you want. And
George them.
George X. I don't know.
I love it.
There's a lot of cool things to learn around what can be unlocked and uncovered. This is ironic. When we just stop talking and listen to what people have to say and ask deep questions, says the man who has just been talking for the past however long. So
that is why you're here. It's okay.
That's what I'm learning.
Amazing. We only have a couple minutes left, unfortunately, and hopefully we can have you on again. We can just sit and talk about life and have people listen to us. They can practice listening. Oh, they are. People are listening to us.
Dear listener,
thank you for listening.
And you're welcome for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Practical advice on your list. Kate Murphy, You're Not Listening. Really short, really good. Explains a lot.
I love that. A couple questions before we end off. I actually really appreciate your ability to be a really good storyteller. I feel like you're one of the best storytellers that I know. You and our best friend, Amanda Cashman, she's also an amazing one, but you two in a room are just so fun together. I'm just going to kind of throw a random question, but can you give me a 2-minute story that has really impacted you in your life and that kind of has stuck with you, whether the lesson or kind of an aha moment or it just fucking rocked your world kind of thing? 2 minutes, because we're wrapping up soon. And I really want to get at it.
2 minutes. This is like someone's introducing a friend and it's really funny and says, they're really funny. And then the pressure's high for that joke to totally. Land. Well, I think just something recently that happened to me on this kind of like self-discovery. Who am I? What is our identity? How were we created and wired? I went through this exercise with a facilitator and they kind of set you up and they have you do these visualizations. And there was something really powerful that happened to me that's kind of like stuck with me and it has continued to stick with me is I closed my eyes and we were supposed to wait for pictures to kind of emerge. And this picture just started to kind of reveal itself to me. Soft music was playing in the background and I started to see this picture of a tree. And the way that they started to set up the visualization was like sometimes in these images or these words or these phrases that come to you in this workshop will kind of be the identity of who you are, right? So some people have these really cool titles like Soaring Eagle or like Obliterator of Darkness. And there's this meaning that we can derive from these outputs of this exercise. And I saw this tree pop up and I was like, tree? This guy got an eagle. She got a cool princess warrior. And I'm like, a tree? And so I got kind of bummed out. But then I like let the visualization kind of materialize as part of the exercise. And then I saw that the tree was part of like a broader circumstance, a broader forest. And then actually I realized that there was a lush body of foliage. And then there was like a tiny little snail at the very bottom as well. And suddenly I'm like, a snail. Snails aren't that cool. Snails aren't powerful and strong and flying around. And the vision just kept getting wider and wider. And then I realized it was a landscape and the focus between the snail and the redwood tree and the whole picture in it became really powerful because I recognized that, oh, this is me. This is my identity. I'm someone that can see the big picture, like the redwoods, and I can see the tiny little detail on the snail and we can go back and forth. I'm wired to go back and forth. And so that visualization kind of came to life for me and it was really powerful. And you know the end of the story because you were there in France because I told you about this. Then the next day, actually, I didn't tell you about this. This happened when we were doing that workout that I mentioned earlier. I had my face in the ground doing a push-up and I saw a tiny snail. I'm like, this is part of my vision. And I looked up and there was a gorgeous forest. And it was something about this visual manifestation coming to life in real time. Mm-hmm. I got so excited because it seemed like a sign or at least a mental construct completion of the fact that this is who I am and how I'm wired to see the little and the big all at once. And it thrilled me and being able to see that come to life with you all was really powerful. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I'm going to remember for a long time. And it's something that helped me remember who I am and how I'm created.
I remember you asked me for my phone to take a photo of that snail. And you're right, there was a forest just beyond that from the place that we were staying. And it was just it was really cool. And you were like freaking out. And we were like, what's up? And then you told us. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think those of you who are listening, how good of a storyteller is he? Thank you so much. You're so good. We have two questions left. Isaac, you have some thoughts.
Firstly, I'm smiling so hard my mouth hurts. Secondly, we have two closing questions. And the first closing question is, what does an empowered Michael Forsberg look like?
An empowered Michael Forsberg looks like a man that's surrounded by people that trust him to flourish and also can trust him to support their flourishing.
Hmm. And finally, what do you know for sure?
I know for sure that wider understanding plus empathy equals a better humanity.
Michael, thank you very much for your time. I've enjoyed the crap out of the last 53 minutes and 13 seconds. Thank you.
Likewise. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, guys. Peace.
Bye.
This podcast is the work of Lightword, our company, named for that toward the light direction which informs every single thing we do, including money, which means, like everything else, the way we earn revenue as a company is not based on industry norms. It's based on what feels deeply right and aligned by passing through the door that feels like it has more behind it, not less. And the way we keep this podcast going is all Lightword. It's pay what feels good. It's an exchange of value between you and us. We're keeping conventional podcast advertising totally out of this. Here's how pay what feels good works. We give you this episode because it feels good to do so. And then you consider, honestly, what number of dollars this episode is genuinely worth to you. I do not care if that's $3, $1,000, or literally $0 and a heart emoji, as long as that trade genuinely makes your day better. The energy there is the entire point, and that is what we're building our business on. No advertisers, no selling your attention, just you and us, trading value in a way that builds us both up. So whatever the number, when you're done listening, head to empoweredhumanacademy.com and hit the pay what feels good button. We use this policy across our company's work, and I'm excited to bring it here to the world of podcasts. This is us voting for the world we want to see. Y'all, the whole point of everything is to open up ourselves in all the fullness we are made for, and then to create with everything that is real and true and bright. That's the work of a life. That's what we're working on. And you're here because you feel that for yourself, too. And we believe in you completely.
Thanks for joining us this round. And hey, for every conversation in this series, including this one, we've assembled a downloadable set of notes, table questions, a journal prompt, and some action steps that you can use to bring the energy and the lessons of this conversation home to your own life. Head to our podcast website, empoweredhumanacademy.com.
Hey, thank you for being here. Now, get out there and do something that feels exactly like you. We will do the same.
And for us, that includes bringing you the next conversation. We cannot wait. Have an awesome, awesome day.